Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else,
a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country and around the world.
This podcast is produced by faculty and staff in the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana.
And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else.
All right, this is Bart Everson, and welcome to the podcast. I'm speaking today with Joan Middendorf, who is an instructional consultant at the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning at Indiana University, my alma mater. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bart. Thanks for having me here.
I'm so glad to have you with us, and I was wondering if you could take a moment just to explain for those who are listening, what is an instructional consultant, and what is it that you do?
At Indiana University, the thing I do most is that I lead groups of faculty to develop new ways of thinking about their teaching. I like to do it in groups because I find that the cross-disciplinary practice, it's hard to think about your own thinking if you're a chemist or a computer scientist or an English professor. You're so used to thinking in the ways you do, you're so good at it, that when you have to explain, as an English professor to a chemist, to a computer science professor, then you can see that they're doing very different things as they explain things to you, and it helps you make clear to them what you're about just by having to work in this. So I really do almost all my work in teams in cross-disciplinary faculties.
Okay, so you're associated with something I've been hearing about, which is this decoding the disciplines thing. And I'm wondering if you could explain what that is. Is it a movement? Is it a philosophy? Is it a theory? Is it a cult? What is it exactly?
Yeah. About 20 years ago, when I started leading these faculty summer groups, we found there was a lack in theories about college teaching. And unintentionally, we developed this theory to fill in the hole in the theory. So this is a theory about the gap between experts, the way they think, and the way novices think. So it's a theory about how to prioritize what to teach and which methods to use. Experts can do a lot of things all at once, but then when they go to teach somebody else what they do, those things that they can do all at once are hard for them to explain. So that's what this is. This is a theory about teaching, and it's looking for the places where students get stuck, which signals where the expert's doing their critical thinking and signals to the expert to try to break that down for the students.
All right. Well, that sounds like it might be useful. You've got a new book coming out very soon through Stylus Publishing. It's called Overcoming Student Learning Bottlenecks. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you could tell us, why did you write this book? What's it about? What is a learning bottleneck anyhow?
Yeah. When I find myself saying the same thing or something very similar more than five times, I typically start writing it down. And so that's how this book started. I started writing down this process that I was using with faculty. And the thing about this book is that, our implicit intellectual skills are really honored in academia. We really like when people are very, very smart. They can make analytic leaps that other people can't follow, sometimes even their colleagues. Mm-hmm. Faculty, I like to say, are kind of often the smarty pants in the room. But people with great academic skills and understanding are not born that way, and they've learned how to do it. And then what they've learned has become pretty natural to them, implicit, all these habits of minds and assumptions and conventions of academic work. And so we're learning a way to break that down so they could teach to somebody else. It's a little like when you are teaching somebody to drive a car, you usually want two minds there because there's a lot of things to do. You've got to press on the gas and the brake pedal. You have to turn the wheel. You're trying to keep this 2,000-pound killing machine from running over anybody. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to get from, to the right place. But after a while, pretty soon, a lot of those things go away. They become natural. They become hidden to you. And really, you basically have to think about what's the shortest way to get from point A to point B and what is that nut in my rearview mirror doing? And the rest, you don't pay attention to. And that's the same in our disciplinary thinking. At first, with our discipline, we have to think about a lot of things, but then a lot of it becomes natural. And we just become interested in the little edge where we're just learning things. But then that makes it hard. When you go to teach somebody how to drive a car, it's hard. And when you go to teach somebody how to do things in our discipline, it's very hard. So we put people in cross-disciplinary teams so they can start helping each other notice what is hard about what they're doing, and so they can explain it to each other.
And that dialogue needs to happen across disciplines?
Yeah, yeah. This one professor that I interviewed recently, he said he was really surprised about how much of his own knowledge he was just skipping over and telling it to his students. And the people in his team, you know, they kept asking him, so he was talking with his students about making logical proofs in computing. And most of the people he would talk to about that would be theoretical computer scientists or mathematicians. And they would all say, yeah, students are really bad at this. So that's kind of student bashing. We don't want student bashing. But when he talked to these people from different fields, instead of saying, yeah, that's really hard, students are doing, they would say, yeah, how do you do that? What do you do? And he'd start explaining it, and he would struggle to explain it. So then he would have to break it down a little more. They could follow parts of it. Because PhDs, you know, the people in these groups are very smart. As long as they keep staying with not letting things gloss over, not just letting their eyes glaze over when they can't understand, then they can keep asking the person for more and more explanations. And the person is really unpacking their own knowledge for the other people. And then they all do that for each other, and they all kind of have these aha moments like, wow, I see these big parts I haven't been explaining to students. And then that helps all the regular other parts of teaching. How do you model for students? How do you provide practice for students? How do you assess students? Become more easy to decide, because you know what we call the mental move or the mental action. We've gotten that out onto the table.
Well, so you've been obviously taking this to faculty for a while now.
Yeah.
Are faculty generally receptive to this approach?
Yeah. I think faculty are very interested in it. One faculty member told us that she thought it was really useful because with this bottleneck viewpoint, you know, looking for the places where students get stuck, not being mad about it, but looking for it, then instead of getting frustrated or student bashing, then she could, you know, thinking the students aren't working hard or they're not smart enough, she could actually realize that there's something truly difficult about what it is that she wanted them to do. And she could try to uncover what makes it difficult and then help them move forward. And she said that for her, that was like switching a mentality from a kind of more pessimistic view of the students toward a more optimistic view that they can actually break through this together. So that's the kind of thing faculty say after they've been through it. And then we also have some research that the method works. There's a new volume of New Directions for Teaching and Learning that shows across the whole volume is about cross-disciplinary groups at Mount Royal University, and they're interviewing each other and what they learned from that. They got ideas for just really what kind of thinking they were doing, but they got better ideas for service learning and for curriculum in a professional program. Psychologists have used this process to identify the main places students are getting stuck in studying psychology. And I think one of the most interesting areas people have been publishing research on is in student partnerships. You know, the new idea of when you're doing work at teaching centers, doing research on teaching and learning, we should not just study students as objects, but include them in the research. And some people at Elon University, some undergrads, and Peter Felton did a study of the bottlenecks involved in writing a literature review for political science. So that was very interesting that the students could help uncover where what the professors say they were doing when they did a literature review was different from what they were teaching.
Wow, sounds like there's quite a bit of data then that's been accumulating around around this approach. Well, you know, all this talk about disciplines and so forth reminds me that here at Xavier, there's been a lot of talk lately about promoting interdisciplinarity.
Yeah.
And it seems like this, there might be some opportunities in this approach to promote interdisciplinarity. Is that how you see it?
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, maybe we just at a certain point, we're writing our first book and we had to give a title to the process. Sometimes the title Decoding the Disciplines puts people off. Really what we're talking about is each field has kind of a set, an underlying set of mental moves that they use for creating knowledge. And we call that the epistemology. You know, it's an epistemic community, a group of scholars who share common methods. And a discipline has a set of those that they tend to use, though there'll be people on the edges that are using other things. And you kind of have a stack of those for each discipline kind of in a silo. And interdisciplinary, and some of those, really surprising, we've done this work for so long, that in some fields that seem very far away, those stack of mental moves that they use are common, like visualization. Visualization is really important in some of the sciences, like in biology. You have to visualize the biological process. And then in sculpture, when you're creating sculptures, people do a lot of visualization. And so it's interesting that two fields seemingly very different have a lot of similarities. Or like generating hypotheses, you know, in the sciences, that's so important, but it's not that different from in history where people have to generate explanations for what happened historically. The mental move is not totally different. So interdisciplinarity to me then is to just take a certain set of mental moves from certain fields and put them in a new stack and call it something different.
Well, that sounds like it could be kind of fun.
It is. It is when you, and for me, thinking about the mental move we want students to learn by noticing from where they got stuck, then that tells us where we, the expert, are doing a lot of things at once. We need to break it down. What are our mental moves? They're often a bunch of things all at once, so there's several mental moves. Once we can figure out what those are, for me, that is like putting the horse before the cart. You don't pick the teaching method until we know what kind of mental move is this and what teaching methods match.
All right, well, let's assume that somebody listening to this might be intrigued and want to know more. Of course, they could look for your book, Overcoming Student Learning Bottlenecks. But are there, I believe there's also some online resources that might be available. Is that something we could link to?
Yeah, we have a listserv. So Decoding the Disciplines listserv. It's a Google group.
Great.
And we have a website, decodingthedisciplines.org. Decoding the Disciplines, all one word, .org. So that's another place you can go. We have a YouTube channel. We only have two videos right now, but I'll put a third one up pretty soon and maybe a fourth one up pretty soon. So that's a YouTube channel, Decoding the Disciplines. So one of these days I'll get myself a Twitter handle, just have to decide what it's going to be. So I'll do one then too. And maybe it'll be called Bottlenecks. I'm not sure. But anyway, yeah, there's some other places where you can find information about this. I think it's really fun to think about what the bottlenecks are across fields. And that's really it makes it so faculty can, this isn't like a teaching method. Everybody has to do the same thing. You get to pick where your students get stuck in your class. Like, you know, in an African-American studies course, students get really, they don't understand significance, the significance of a person or a place or event, and why things are important to the lived experiences of Black people or to the wider community. And that's really different from a bottleneck in physics, where people have a lot of preconceived notions just from the way their body interacts with phenomena in the world. And that gets in the way with experiencing physics the way the physicists make everything so abstract, and you kind of have to give up your own intuition from the real world to go into the world of physics. And so each field has very interesting, sometimes similar, often very different bottlenecks that are kind of predictable, but everybody gets to pick the bottleneck that bothers them and then work on it and learn how to teach really well to that bottleneck. We find once you've gotten them really good on one bottleneck, it kind of opens up your whole field to them, because they don't have to learn everything about the field, but getting really grounded in one part of the thinking of your field makes the rest of the field more available.
Great. Well, it seems like this might be a good time to mention, I believe you're going to be down here in New Orleans in December. And
yeah.
So we're hoping to get you on campus to share some of these ideas with our Xavier faculty there during finals week in Xavier. And for the rest of the world, for anybody else who's listening to this anywhere, we'll have those online resources linked. Is there any final things that we should touch on before we say goodbye?
Well, I think if you're interested in trying to make students get unstuck in your class, if you're interested in learning to get a viewpoint that's student learning oriented, and if you're interested in putting the thinking you want students to learn, the critical thinking of your field, at the heart of what you're doing, you might be interested to come to one of the sessions I'm leading at Xavier in December, or lots of the other places that I lead workshops from, or go look at our videos, because people are finding this a powerful unifying theory for college teaching.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Joan. Once again, this is Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else, and it's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu.
That's cat.xula.edu.
Until next time, keep on teaching, learning, and everything else.